from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? It is Friday, June 19th, 2015. That's right, you have made it. The weekend is now just 4 hours away. Can you believe that? So bittersweet here on Current Sports. We hate to say goodbye for the weekend, but each and every Friday we go out with a bang. We've got a fantastic show for you as I will invite the play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts, Jesse Goldberg Strassler. He will be in the building to talk about the very first class to be inducted into the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. You do not want to miss that chat. We'll also talk about the slump of Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods shooting an 80 plus in yesterday's first round of the U.S. Open. Come on, man. You got to be kidding me. Oh, but we'll chat about Tiger and give our thoughts and predictions on who will pull out this year's U.S. Open. Also, the future of Draymond Green looks a little bit bright. If you are a fan of the Golden State Warriors, Draymond Green, yeah, a guy who I think is going to get a max contract. We'll discuss that. We'll also have Reflection Friday, as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this June 19th. All right, folks, we begin with news concerning the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. In a press conference yesterday morning, the Lansing Lugnuts announced that Jim Abbott, Bill Freehan, Charlie Gentringer, Ernie Harwell, Al Kaline, Hal Neuheiser, Pat O'Keefe, John Smoltz, Alan Trammell, and Larry Tuttle will be inducted into the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame on August 6th at Cooley Law School Stadium. What a class! Oh my goodness, I got goosebumps just reading those names. Now, the 10-member class was selected following a process which began in late January. Now, baseball fans from throughout the state submitted nominations of candidates from the Little League through Major League level, compiling a ballot of 75 deserving players, coaches, contributors, and teams. Again, folks, you want to keep it locked right here to Current Sports on WKAR AM 870 as we will invite Jesse Goldberg Strassler, the play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts and organizer for the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame, to talk about this remarkable class. Pitcher Anthony Misiewicz decides to bypass his senior season at Michigan State to sign a contract with the Seattle Mariners. Now, the left-hander from Chesterfield will begin his pro career Thursday night in Everett, Washington, with Seattle's short season Class A affiliate in the Northwest League. He was the Mariners' 18th round selection in the MLB draft, one of a record 8 Spartans selected. Michigan State senior sprinter Jaleesa Wesney will represent her native Canada in the Pan American Games that will be held in Toronto from July 10th to the 29th. Now, the track and field portion of the games will take place July 21st to the 25th, at the Pan Am Athletic Stadium. Wesney, a native of Cambridge, Ontario, will be a part of the women's 4x100 relay team. The senior is a 2-time All-American, including earning second-team honors as part of the Michigan State 4x100 relay team that finished 12th at the NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships in Eugene, Oregon. Now, the team finished with a time of 44.53. She also earned second-team All-American honors in the 2013 4x400 relay. All right, high-profile exits of athletic director Dave Brandon and football coach Brady Hoke from the University of Michigan Athletic Department, coupled with a decline in football attendance, hurt the bottom line for the athletic department. Interim athletic director Jim Hackett told U of M Board of Regents members today that the department will finish this fiscal year with a $7.9 million budget deficit. Now, it's the first time in more than a decade that this has occurred to the university. Well, any thought of Draymond Green donning anything but the blue and gold colors of the Golden State Warriors next season can now go out the window. The former MSU hoop great says, quote, "I'll be here." Shortly after his triple-double helped the Golden State Warriors clinch the NBA title on Tuesday night, he says, quote, "I love this group of guys." The quote appeared in a column by San Jose Mercury News columnist Ten Kawakami. Later, Green said, quote, "We want to come back to the NBA Finals, and this team, we're young. We've got our nucleus in place. We've got a lot of guys making sacrifices. I think we can continue to do this for years to come." Well said, Dede. All right, Victor Martinez is in New York City, and he will be activated prior to tonight's series opener against the New York Yankees, the Detroit Tigers said yesterday. Now, manager Brad Ausmus talked to Martinez on Wednesday night and said, quote, "He said he feels good. He seemed to feel like he was ready." All right, Detroit Lions, they waived cornerback Bill Bentley after their final practice of minicamp, ending the third-year cornerback's run after three injury-riddled seasons with the team. Bentley, a third-round pick out of Louisiana Lafayette in 2012, played in nickel packages each of his last 3 years, but was limited in practice this spring as he tried returning from a torn ACL. In Tyus Battle, a 5-year basketball recruit, has decommitted from Michigan's 2016 recruiting class. Battle, a shooting guard from New Jersey, committed to Michigan in May, but now looks to set to switch schools. Battle was choosing between Duke, Syracuse, Michigan, and Louisville when he initially committed and is set to take an official visit to Syracuse over the weekend. Battle is the 4th-ranked shooting guard and number 20 player in his class as ranked by 24/7 Sports. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call 517-355-9527 to be a part of the discussion. Yeah, and I think it's about that time to start the show.
Very happy, that's for sure. It was a tough day. Got off to a bad start. I stuck that 6-iron in the ground on the first hole, and then just couldn't quite get it turned around today. It's just one of those things, you know. Just got to work through it, and I'm trying as hard as I can to do it. And it's just for some reason I just can't get the consistency that I would like to have out there. But you know, the bright side is at least I kicked Ricky's butt today.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports on a beautiful Friday, June 19th. I am your host, Al Martin. The man behind the glass, of course, is Isaac Constance. We are so glad you have tuned in to Current Sports to close out your week. And that was the voice of Tiger Woods, folks. Oh, man. It's tough watching Tiger. It is so tough. And again, this is coming from a guy who is one of the biggest Tiger Woods fans that you would ever meet. I remember in high school, I used to have a big poster of Tiger that was plastered on my bedroom wall. And watching Tiger's dominance over the years, when he was in his prime, I mean, he was one of the most entertaining athletes that there is or ever was, point blank period. From donning the red shirts that he wears on Sundays as he is quote unquote out for blood each and every Sunday. Which he still does, but I think that red is slowly turning to pink now. I will say that because Tiger Woods just hasn't been the same, folks. Oh, get this. Tiger Woods actually shot an 80, folks, in yesterday's first round for the third time this year. Are you kidding me? That's like, I mean, I could possibly shoot an 80 if I went out there right now on the golf course. I kid you not. It's so bad, actually. If you look at, you know, the youngest individual out on the field right now partaking in the U.S. Open, it happens to be 15-year-old Cole Hammer. 15 years old, folks. Cole Hammer competing in the U.S. Open, which is remarkable in itself. Tiger couldn't even beat a 15-year-old yesterday, folks. Cole Hammer shot a 77. A 77 while Tiger Woods shoots an 80. Oh, boy. Embarrassing? Yeah, I think so. I think so. And Tiger actually right now, I guess you can say he finished up the first round tied for 152nd in a field of 156. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I have been, and this is crazy because if you look at yesterday, you know, during our Throwback Thursday segment to close out yesterday's show, I had acknowledged how 15 years ago to the day, looking at June 18th, 15 years ago, it was the anniversary of Tiger Woods winning the U.S. Open by 15 strokes. And now, if you would have told me back in the year 2000 that Tiger Woods, 15 years from then, would be shooting an 80 and be among the last in the field of the U.S. Open, I would have said, are you okay? I think you need to go see a doctor. This is Tiger Woods we're talking about. One of the greatest athletes we've ever seen. The greatest golfer I've ever seen. Now, statistically, you can still make an argument. I think it's still true that Jack Nicklaus is that guy. And we're still hoping, if you're like me, and I'm a big Tiger fan, if you're like me, I'm hoping that he could eventually catch Jack. But I don't see it. I don't see it. We've been waiting for Tiger Woods to win a major championship since 2008. And I keep giving you guys false hope saying this is the year. This is the year we finally see Tiger do it. And then he goes out there and his drive off the tee is so inaccurate, which, you know, historically, though, when you look at Tiger Woods' game, he's always been a power guy off the tee, never that accurate. I mean, his greens and regulations have never been off the charts. But Tiger's putting and his short game is what made his career, is what made him one of the best we've ever seen do it. If he got into trouble, you know that Tiger Woods was going to find a way to get himself out. And when he found the putting green, when he found the dance floor, he was going to put that golf ball in the hole. Period. That's what made Tiger Woods so great. But we all know what happened in 2008. The incident with his then wife deciding to take a golf club to his, I believe, a Cadillac Escalade. And Tiger Woods' infidelity with the amount of women that he was in cahoots with while he was married. It did something to Tiger Woods mentally. And in the game of golf, if you don't have it, if you're not strong with that muscle between the ears, pack it up, you're done. That's it. That's it for you. And we've been hoping, because if you remember, not too long ago, I think it was like 2 years ago, where Tiger Woods is actually named as the golfer of the year, even though he did not win a major, he had won enough other tourneys to become the tour's big, you know, the biggest money getter on the tour. And you just felt like, okay, eventually one of those tourneys is going to be maybe a Masters or a U.S. Open. But it just not has happened, and it pains me to say it, but I think Tiger Woods is done, folks. I think he's done. I just do not see it. Anytime a 15-year-old goes out there and beats you, and you shoot an 80, he's been consistently shooting 80s now in the tournaments that he's playing. It's tough to crawl yourself out of that. I want to invite now Isaac to the show. Isaac, how you doing? And first off, man, happy Friday, brother.
Happy Friday, Al. It's this week went by so fast, blazing sonic fast, you know?
Yeah, it did.
But, yeah, I have to agree with you on Tiger Woods. I think he's done because we've never, like you said, golf is partly mental, and this is something that's tough to recover from. This happened so many years ago, and if he still isn't back to where he was and to his best form, I don't think he's going to get there. But also, before we talk more golf, I've got to issue a local apology for you for messing up your streak for cash. I got to do that on there. I did it. I said Brazil by 2 goals or more, and
yeah,
they didn't. So that was my fault. I admit it.
It's all good. And you guys know I'm a big, you know, I'm always on my phone playing ESPN Streak for Cash, you know, where they have each and every day they have a list of sporting events and different scenarios. And if you get right and you continue your streak, you have to get these all in a row. So if you lose one, you got to start all the way back at one. So my streak was about at like, I think it was like at 4 or 5. And I, you know, Isaac being the soccer expert that he is, there were a lot of soccer picks. I believe this was yesterday, wasn't it? Or was it 2 days ago?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Two days.
Yeah, it was 2 days ago, and I came to him like, Isaac, man, what should I do, man? And, you know, he did a little bit of Googling, and it was like, Al, you need to hit on Brazil to win by 2 goals. But before that, it was also a pick on whether or not France would win Group F, and they did. Well, they did, and I went against the grain because there were two teams statistically ahead of them at the time, but France ended up advancing and winning Group F, and it's all good, though, man. I mean, hey, Streak for Cash, it's so unpredictable. So, but I accept your apology, though, Isaac. That's very nice of you. I appreciate that, man. But, yeah, I mean, going back to Tiger, though, man, again, you know, anytime you look at Tiger Woods, and I think, you know, the reason why Tiger still now, you know, he leads the headlines on ESPN. I mean, he's still the talk of the town on radio shows like here on Current Sports and on, you know, and nationally as well. It's because of how good Tiger Woods back in the day was. And there are still a lot of sport fans out there just hoping that Tiger gets back to that form. And when, you know, just to see somebody who was on the mountaintop just fall this hard. I mean, it's hard to ignore. It is certainly hard to ignore. I never thought that I would see an amateur in Cole Hammer, not to discredit Cole Hammer, because, you know, to be 15 years old and to be competing in the U.S. Open, that's pretty impressive stuff. But to compare it to Tiger Woods, who was the creme de la creme of golf for a long time, and to see him get beat by a 15-year-old, the third youngest to play a U.S. Open, it just blew my mind how, you know, Tiger shoots an 80 and Cole shoots a 77 and Tiger has a 15-year-old beat him in round one. It just blows my mind. And, you know, if you look at, you know, Cole Hammer, he made a double bogey and 5 bogeys en route to a 7-over-77. He's tied for 135th. You know, comparing that to Tiger Eldrick Woods, who, you know, now is, what, 152nd now. I don't know what time he tees off, but it's really just disheartening for me as a casual sports fan. If you looked at the entire field, though, Isaac, I mean, you know, a few things to note here. Masters champ Jordan Spieth, who I'm a big fan of, talk about a young gun who is going to be good for years to come. Only 21 years old. Again, Masters champion. He's donning the green jacket right now. He had a 2-under. He shot a 2-under 68 on Thursday and seeks his second straight major title. He is actually trying to become the 6th player ever to win both the Masters and U.S. Open in the same season. It would be truly remarkable to see that come to fruition if he can pull that off. And right now, as we speak, as I'm speaking right now, the leaderboard just updated. And how about this? Jordan Spieth right now is in a 4-way tie in first place of the U.S. Open through 6 at 5-under, along with Brian Campbell, Dustin Johnson, and Henrik Stenson. If I had to choose right now, if I'm a betting man, and if I am a guy rooting for anyone in this tourney that has a shot as of right now, I'm rooting for this young kid, 20 years old, Jordan Spieth, to pull this thing out. I think he's my guy right now going into the weekend.
Oh, me too. Because the other thing is, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Rory McIlroy on the come up. How, you know, he really put a lot of fire in the body of golf fans because they finally had someone to see after Tiger Woods. So I think Jordan Spieth's the second coming of that. I'm definitely rooting for him, and he's on such good momentum. He's on fire. He's blazing behind him. So I can't really see him giving this up because he's hitting it so well these past couple of tournaments. And like you said, coming off a Masters win to be doing this good in the U.S. Open, it's really unprecedented. And he's 21.
21 years old, and again, he can become the 6th player ever. Only 6 have done it. Only 5 have done it. He could be the 6th player ever to win both the Masters and the U.S. Open in the same season. So I'm rooting for this young kid. I think the future of golf is truly bright when you look at guys like Jordan Spieth. You know, how about, oh, goodness, I'm forgetting. I think, is it Ricky Fowler who just won a big major not too long ago as well. He's a young gun on the tour as well, as well as Rory McIlroy, as you just mentioned. I mean, the future of golf looks very, very bright, but golf is healthier, and golf is more fun to watch when Tiger Woods is competing. I also have to note that leaders Dustin Johnson and Henrik Stenson, after round one, both carded 5 under 65s, which is a score that Martin Keimer opened up with en route to an 8-shot victory last year. So these four are on pace right now to win. It's going to come. I think it's going to be a very close tournament at the end of the day. But again, if I'm rooting for somebody, if I have a horse in the race, it's going to be Jordan Spieth for me. And Stenson is actually seeking to become the 5th European winner in the last 6 U.S. Opens. Webb Simpson was the last American winner in 2012 at Olympic Club. So it's been a long time since an American has won the U.S. Open of all tourneys, right? Pretty interesting stuff.
Well, and then just looking at my live update leaderboard, Brian Campbell, another American, just dropped out of the tie for first place because he must have hit a bogey on his last shot. So, you know, 2 Americans, 1 European right now tied for first. Set enough to be a good old-fashioned dog race, dog fight, everything.
I'm telling you, because if you look at, you know, the leaderboard right now, there is only, like, you know, like, Henrik Stenson is the only non-American right now competing for that lead. So very interesting stuff. As far as looking at the entire field and how the course is playing, the hardest hole is clearly the 515-yard par 4 7th hole. It was the toughest on the course in round one. There were just 11 birdies to go along with 53 bogeys and 13 double bogeys or worse as number 7 averaged just almost 5 strokes. So if that's a hole that you got to bring your A game at, it's that one. The easiest hole happens to be the par 4, 317-yard, 12th hole played the easiest on Thursday. It yielded 11 eagles. 11 eagles, are you kidding me? 47 birdies and just 15 bogeys or worse. Players average 3.68 strokes on number 12. So, at the end of the day, I am going with Jordan Spieth to win the U.S. Open. What do you think? Who's going to pull it out? Who's going to raise that trophy on Sunday? And what are your thoughts on the slump of Eldrick Tiger Woods? Are you kidding me? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Isaac, I know you'll be very curious about this story, as we mentioned in our Quicket Headliners. Draymond Green, former Michigan State hoop great Draymond Green, says that he will be donning the blue and gold colors of the Golden State Warriors next season. Really not a surprise to me. It's kind of hard after you win an NBA Finals to say, I'm out of here. And I think, you know, looking at the comments, which I'll get to in just a sec, the general manager of the Warriors, looking at what he had to say, I think all signs point to that he's going to get a lot of money next year, and deservedly so. Draymond says that, quote, I'll be here. He said that shortly after his triple-double helped the Golden State Warriors clinch the NBA title on Tuesday night. He says, quote, I love this group of guys. Now, the quote appeared in a column by San Jose Mercury News columnist Ten Kawakami. Later, Green went on to say, quote, we want to come back to the finals. And this team, we're young. We've got our nucleus in place. We've got a lot of guys making sacrifices. I think we can continue to do this for years to come. Isaac, really no surprise to me, because if you look at Draymond Green, a guy who really, you could have made a very strong argument that he could have been the NBA's defensive player of the year. He also came runner-up to the most improved player for this year in the NBA as well. I mean, looking at the shelf life of Draymond Green, how he plays, the leadership he brings to the table, you know, looking at how he can take you inside, outside, it's hard not to pay Draymond Green a hefty max contract in the future.
It is hard. And the thing with Draymond is, when I look at him, I think he's going to be one of these players that's heavily and appreciated and valued by our generation. But then the next generation might not see what's so special about him. I'm looking at the stats. They're not that great. But that's the beauty of Draymond. He's like, obviously a different position, different play type. But the Robert Parrish, the player that makes a huge impact, and it's tough to see when you look at the stats. So Draymond, yeah, he gets triple doubles, but when you just look at averages, it doesn't show up. And
Well, Isaac, I think it depends on how you look at those stats. Because if you look at Draymond in the regular season, the Michigan State star, he averaged 11.7 points, 8.2 rebounds, and 3.7 assists during the regular season. That's almost a double-double. I mean, he's two rebounds away, looking at his average, from averaging a double-double in the regular season. He upped those numbers when it mattered most in the playoffs. In the playoffs, he actually did average a double-double, 13.6 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists per game. And looking at the amount of talent that Golden State Warriors team has with Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, Andre Iguodala showing up in the finals and being a consistent player for them, to average a double-double amongst all of that talent on the team, I think that's pretty formidable. I think you got to tip the cap to him.
Oh, it is. But, you know, you just look at scoring and then assists, because Draymond does get assists. He's a very good passer for his position. But, you know, when you look at Draymond, he doesn't always just blow you away with the points he scores or the rebounds. So it's just something to keep in mind, how big of an impact this guy has with the stats he does have. Because in my opinion, when I look at those stats, I go like, that's nice, but a lot of people in the league could do it. When I look at the defensive impact and the way he makes that offense go round, he's worthy and deserving of a max contract, and he'll get that.
Right. I definitely agree. All right. Well, I believe we have a call on line one, right, Isaac? Let's get to it. Again, the number to call, folks, is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We've got Austin from Indiana on the line to talk golf and Draymond Green as well. Austin, how you doing?
Al, how you doing, man? Long time no speak.
I'm telling you, it has been a while. How you been, Austin?
I'm doing good. Hey, I'm going to get to the point, but I heard you talking about that 500-yard par 4 on the U.S. Open.
Right.
If you get me out on the course, I'll let you know that'll be nothing for me. I'll probably eagle that hole.
And, folks, if you don't know, Austin and I are longtime friends. We went to college at MSU together. And, Austin, we have been trying to get out on the golf course, man, since the dinosaurs roamed the earth, okay? You don't want none of this, all right? You don't want Al Woods to get out on the course. Well, maybe I should switch my name from Al Woods right now, because Tiger is not. He has not been Tiger Woods.
I don't know if you want to be Al Woods, but I tell you what. Let me know one weekend, man. Come down here and play Notre Dame's golf course with me. It's gorgeous.
Hey, I'm gonna hold you to that, Austin. I'll definitely be hitting you up, my man.
Sounds good. But I'm gonna get to the point, man. About Tiger Woods, man. It's sad to see where his game is right now, and unfortunately, at this point in his career, his demise is greater than his rise right now. But when it's all said and done, once he retires, we'll never question Tiger Woods' greatness. I mean, I have faith in the man that he can pull off at least a couple more tournaments. But like I said, at the end of the day, we'll never question his greatness and how he cultivated the game of golf. I mean, you look at guys like Roy McIlroy and Jordan Spieth, the way they're training and preparing for these tournaments, they stole it from Tiger Woods' method. Mm-hmm. So he changed the game and changed the way people play golf and prepare for the game of golf.
And I always say, Austin, Tiger Woods brought some swag to golf. I will say that. I mean, you
exactly.
know, wearing the red on Sundays, and, you know, just the fist pump, you know, not being afraid to show emotion on the golf course, that competitive
exactly.
nature, you know what I mean? How he would, if he was paired up with somebody going into the weekend and he was in contention for that number one spot in the tourney, I mean, he wasn't talking to you. He wasn't talking. He was locked in, and he just had this ferocity with him. Now, I mean, you heard the bite to start the show. Tiger now, I mean, it just seems as though he doesn't know how to handle losing. Because, you know, he kind of laughs it off, and he looks so uncomfortable now in press conferences. I can only imagine what the man is going through, because it can certainly be jarring to be on top of the world. Everyone loves you. You're on the top of your game, and in the blink of an eye, you're near the bottom of the barrel on the regular looking at a golf tourney. It's unbelievable to me. I don't know what he's going through. I can only imagine, though.
Yeah, I hope he can come out of this slump, man. And then my second point, to comment on Draymond Green, man, I feel like in this day and age, people don't appreciate the type of player Draymond Green is. And my opinion as to one of the reasons why he's so successful, in a league where players don't want to go hard and give 100% every game, I think that's why Draymond Green is so successful, because he gives 100% every single game. And, you know, from watching him play in high school to playing at Michigan State, I've never seen him take a possession off. I've never seen him take a game off. And I got a funny story, then I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is when I knew Draymond was going to emerge to a great basketball player. It was my junior year in high school, 2007, at Lansing Eastern High School for the Thanksgiving Day tournament. Mm-hmm. And preseason tournament, and we were scrimmaging Saginaw. This is when they had him, Daniel West, and that team. I'll never forget, Draymond Green was at the top of the key. Gave our big man a pump fake, got him off the ground. He's driving down the middle of the lane. It's me standing in the middle of the lane, and I ask myself, do I want to get dunked on? Do I take the charge? Or do I tell myself I want a future? And so should I get out the way? I went with number three. I said, I want to go to college and graduate. So I got out the way. Draymond Green drove the middle of the lane. Coach pulled me out the game, yelled at me for not taking a charge. I looked at my coach and said, look, it's just a scrimmage. It's not that serious. So I'm not taking that charge.
You know what, Austin? And that is why you are one smart brother. But that was the moment. Not too many people can say that they had an opportunity to even contest a Draymond Green dunk down the middle. So that's a pretty cool memory, man. I'm sure you'll be telling your grandkids. All right. Thanks a lot, Austin. I think we lost him. He kind of was breaking up at the end. But thanks a lot, Austin. Austin is always a great call. Again, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we discuss here on the show, again, the number is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, the man, the myth, the legend has just walked through the doors here at our WKAR studios. That's right, the play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. He'll talk about the very first class to be inducted into the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. You do not want to miss that chat. Keep it locked right here to Current Sports on WKAR AM 870. Jesse Howe. What is up, beautiful people? Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, always have been. Hey, did you miss Current Sports TV last night? If you did, you missed a wowza of a show. I got a chance to sit down with a man who I've been watching ever since I was around, 7 years old, with my socks off in front of the television, the play-by-play voice, of course, for the Detroit Pistons, as well as the Michigan State football team, George Blaha, a broadcasting icon. He joined me this week on Current Sports TV. Had a fantastic time picking his brain. If you missed it, just simply go to video.wkar.org. You can view that episode and any episode that we have done in Current Sports TV history. And speaking of Current Sports TV, we have a Current Sports TV alum that has just walked through our doors here at the Current Sports Studios. He is certainly a friend of the show, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice of the Lansing Lugnuts and also organizer for the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. Jesse, how are you doing, my man?
Good afternoon, Al. I am pumped.
I bet. I mean, looking at this incredible list that I talked about at the very beginning of the show, I mean, these names just jump right at you. The first class, the first ever class to be inducted into the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. I mean, you're talking about John Smoltz, Pat O'Keefe, Larry Tuttle, Al Kaline, Ernie Harwell. I mean, I could go on and on and on. First off, for those that missed my whole rant at the beginning of the show, talk about this incredible class and who is being inducted.
Well, let me tell you first how we got here. But yeah, I agree. The first class is first class. All right. So we began January 28th. We opened up the nominations to the public. We said, who do you think is a Michigan Baseball Hall of Famer? Does not matter the level. So we got Little League nominations, high school, college, major league, right on through. And then we compiled a ballot of 75 worthy players, coaches, teams, contributors. In the case of Ernie Harwell, the voice of summer. We put that ballot out to a Michigan baseball expert panel of nine. Longtime Tigers voice Paul Carey, current TV voice Mario Mpemba, Michigan State grad, now voice of the Brewers, historian Joe Block, sports anchors Fred Heumann and Tim Statt, 30-year scout for the Detroit Tigers Clyde Weir, MHSAA assistant director Mark Ewell, longtime coach and now coach with Ball State, but he used to coach University of Michigan, Rich Maloney. We went out, we talked to everyone, and we said, oh, Jake Ball Sr. too, the high school coaching icon. I probably missed somebody. It's such a great group. And we said, here's your ballot. We went through three rounds of voting to trim it down to that group of 10. And the fascinating thing to me was the guys who got trimmed off that list, Michigan has produced baseball royalty. This is seriously a Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. It was contentious. And I am proud of this inaugural class of 10. We'll be inducting them Thursday, August the 6th, Hall of Fame night at the ballpark. And then you'll be able to walk around the outfield concourse and walk past those Hall of Fame plaques to inspire baseball players, baseball fans to come.
That is unbelievable stuff. Now, Jesse, when you look at this incredible class, first off, you talk about the committee that had the tall task of choosing 10 members in the first ever class, which is pretty special stuff. How hard was it for them? You know, guys like Tim Stout, Fred Heumann, Mario Mpemba, and so on and so forth. How tough was it for those individuals to riddle down those names and those nominees to choose just 10?
I presume it was very difficult. If you looked at that list, it is very tough to simply say, let's say 10 to 20. So what we did first round, we said, vote for 15. Second round, vote for 13. That way we get a feel for who everyone thought in this initial class, who needs to go in first. Mm-hmm. Think about the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. When Cooperstown first opened, the National Baseball Hall of Fame, they put in five. They put in Ty Cobb. They put in Babe Ruth, Christy Matthews. They put in the cream of the crop. But we wanted to make sure that we weren't just honoring the best Detroit Tigers who came through. We wanted to make sure that we reflected the range of baseball greatness. Jim Abbott was Flint Central. He was University of Michigan. Made the major leagues. But we're talking about one of the best collegiate pitchers of all time. College Baseball Hall of Famer. With Larry Tuttle and Pat O'Keefe, we're talking about the only coaches, high school ranks, with over 1,000 wins in this state. And they're going strong and they're vying back and forth. And who knows who's going to be first after each season. That's how dominant they have been. And our voters looked at this, they parsed it, and they said, here's your initial class, and I can't wait to see the classes to come. To my mind, everything has been a beginning. Beginning of asking for those nominations. Who does everyone think is a Michigan Baseball Hall of Famer? Beginning saying, here is our class. The beginning on August the 6th, inducting, opening up that Hall of Fame, and all the years to come to honor Michigan baseball history in the seasons. Look, this is the first year. We're going to be down the line. We're going to be filling this up, and we're going to be honoring Michigander after Michigander.
So did you guys sense any pressure at all, Jesse, when looking at that this is the very first class? Years and years down the line, when people look at the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame, they're going to look at who is the first individuals. Who were the first individuals to get inducted? Did you sense any pressure to make sure that you guys sent a lasting impression that would set the foundation for inductees to come?
This might surprise you, but no.
Not at all.
My feeling is everyone who gets inducted next year, everyone who gets inducted the year after that, they are all Michigan Baseball Hall of Famers. The pressure is just how big this feels personally to everyone. Where you see that personal connection, whether you grew up rooting for Bill Freehan, whether you grew up listening to Ernie Harwell, just the ability to say, this is a Michigan Baseball Hall of Famer. All of those players who have come through Grand Ledge High School over the years, that this is bigger than one person, this is bigger than one team, this is bigger than one community, this is statewide and connecting that state through the national pastime. So that's where it felt big. That's where that pressure comes on to say, we're honoring people and we're honoring what they mean. When I called up Larry Tuttle to tell him that he had been inducted, he hesitated. And then he said, are you sure you're not talking to a different Larry Tuttle? Are you? Pat O'Keefe was staggered. Jim Abbott is thrilled and floored. John Smoltz, I've heard, he's asked for my cell phone number, so I'm nervous when I talk to John.
That's crazy.
The honor that this means to all of them, because they know their roots. and they know what they mean to this area. It is one thing representing national in the sport. It is another thing saying, you represent Michigan, you came from Michigan, and this puts it at a very local level, which makes that personal connection all the stronger.
Jesse, I want you to elaborate on just that, locality. Why was it so important for the committee and the organizers of the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame to put an emphasis on making sure that this isn't, you know, that you're not, as you just stated, not just inducting some of the greatest Tigers of all time, but also looking at high school and honoring those that have had historic high school careers in the game of baseball? And what sort of message do you think that sends to our youth who want to play baseball or who are playing baseball right now?
That it's about the game. That doesn't matter whatever level you're playing at, it's important that baseball is universal, that you can see players who are tall or short or overweight or underweight. It does not matter. You can be slow, you can be fast, you can have a six pack, or you could be skin and bones. The most important thing is saying wherever you play, wherever you go see a game, that game does matter. We're not putting this game out of reach. We're not putting it miles away, or we're not sitting you up in the bleacher seats in the nosebleeds where you can see the players barely and you can't even read the numbers on the back of their jersey. Mm-hmm. We're bringing it home. Baseball is local. The minor leagues bring baseball into smaller cities. High school, Little League, Coach Pitch, Cal Ripken, whatever that level might be, that brings it right into the house. That involves families. That's what baseball is about. I tell people who ask me about the Lugnuts, I say, I love the players, but I love the game more. And this honors the game, and this connects folks with the game.
Very well said. Again, folks, if you are just now tuning in to WKAR's Current Sports, we are talking with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, who is the play-by-play voice behind the Lansing Lugnuts, and also he's an organizer for the Baseball Hall of Fame right here in this beautiful state of Michigan. Now, Jesse, looking at the 10 inductees, do you have a favorite one?
Okay, so I'm biased. I grew up in Maryland, and I make this comparison to folks. Let's say you're growing up in North Dakota, and you love basketball. Well, it wouldn't surprise me if your favorite team was the Warriors or the Cavs, because you're growing up and you're saying, I love Steph Curry above everybody else, or I think LeBron is the best.
Right, right.
So I'm growing up in Maryland, but I'm too close to D.C. to like the Orioles, and I played shortstop.
Okay.
So I grew up the biggest Alan Trammell fan you've ever seen. Every Hanukkah or every birthday, my parents presented me with tickets to Baltimore to see the Orioles face the Tigers. And I could only hope that Alan and sweet Lou Whitaker were in the starting lineup. So there, personally for me, Alan Trammell was my idol.
That's your guy.
That's
so out of all
guy.
Of them, even John Smoltz and looking at the rest of them, that's your guy right there.
And then personally, too, now that I'm older, now that I'm working in radio, Ernie Harwell's the icon.
Isn't he?
He's what you aspire to be. If you're, whatever it is that you're doing, you look up to the epitome, to the utmost, and you say, that's where I want to be. This person got there. Mm. Ernie Harwell is baseball radio broadcasting.
He certainly is. And you know, he's a legend. You know, even when I was growing up, my grandfather was a huge Ernie Harwell guy and would tell me stories of how Ernie Harwell just was, I mean, his voice, legendary and synonymous with, of course, Detroit Tigers baseball. All right, now, I got to ask this question because I really think it has been long overdue, Jesse. Why has it taken so long for Michigan to finally put together a baseball Hall of Fame?
You want to know, my owner, Tom Dixon, with the Lansing Lugnuts, we had this huge stadium renovation that was being planned. New HD video boards, new stadium seating, 360 concourse, all these great ideas. And he started thinking, you know, a baseball Hall of Fame would be great. Surely Michigan has one. And they did their research, and they discovered, just like you discovered, there was none. So I can't speak for all the other decades. I can't speak for everybody else who let the opportunity pass them by. All I can say is I'm proud to be a part of this effort to establish the very first one. And we're going to do our darndest to make sure that it pays respect and tribute.
And to literally have this in the backyard of the Lansing Lugnuts, I mean, it's got to be pretty special for you.
Very special. It floors me. It makes my knees weak to be a part of something this big.
Can you give us a sneak peek into the ceremony in August? I mean, how is this whole thing going to go down? Have you gotten confirmation that pretty much everyone on the list is going to show up?
Well, here's the fun thing is, for example, Coach Tuttle, Coach O'Keefe, they'll be there. Alan Trammell wrote back. He said, I've got a speaking engagement that day.
Okay.
So we'll speak with him. We'll get him out to the ballpark a different day. Okay. Give him his own day. Throw out a first pitch sign, autographs, pose him next to his plaque. So if folks can't be there that induction day, the Hall of Fame is not going anywhere.
Right. And it's going to be in the outfield, right? I mean, talk about that setup. It's very, very cool stuff with individual plaques and so on and so forth.
From 1996 until last year, if you tried to walk around the outfield, you'd have to stop in left center and walk all the way back. Outfield ended. Well, now we've got the 360-degree concourse. And so along the outfield wall, and you can stand wherever you like and watch the baseball game from your own chosen perspective, there will be that Hall of Fame stretching out along the outfield on the promenade. So that way, as you walk around, you'll be walking right past the greats that Michigan has had to offer.
Unbelievable stuff. Again, folks, if you are just now joining us, we are chatting with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice of the Lansing Lugnuts and organizer for the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. Before we get you out of here, Jesse, I got to get a quick update on the Lansing Lugnuts. Again, the team has clinched a playoff spot, 4 straight wins, a 3-game sweep of Bowling Green. What has clicked for this team?
Let me take you back to 3 days ago. Bowling Green comes in. They are tied with us for first place. The Great Lakes Loons are 1 game back. Lake County and Dayton are lurking very dangerously. Bowling Green is tough. Mm-hmm. They beat us 5 out of 6 to start off the year. They swept us in a 3-game series on our home field. We come on in. We first romp past them 13-3 in the opener, and that sets the tone. Jason Leblebigian, 2 home runs. 2 days ago, middle affair in the series. They're thinking, we win. We're tied again for first place.
Right.
They take a 3-1 lead to the bottom of the 6th inning. Jason Leblebigian, 2-run single. 2 outs, they bring in the relief ace, best reliever in the league, Hunter Wood, and our number 9 batter, pesky Tim LeCastro, 2-out, 2-run double on a 3-2 pitch. We win 5-3 because the rain halts it in the 8th right as they're rallying. They're getting something going. They've got a guy thrown out at home. The rain hits, and they can't play the rest of the game. Ended early.
Wow.
Now we've got a little bit of a lead. Now we're saying, you know, if we win this last game, my gosh, we're into the playoffs. Chase DeYoung takes the mound for us, opening day starter. We take on the best pitcher in the Eastern Division. Brent Honeywell throws a screwball, throws 97 miles an hour, all-star. Bowling Green's thinking, at the very least, we've got this game. And Chase DeYoung throws his very first career 9-inning complete game. They've got the best batting average offense in the league. He goes 9. He allowed a 4th-inning run, and that was it. Gave up 4 hits in the game, 3 to Nick Schufo, first-round draft pick, got him to end the game, completing a 3-1 Lugnuts win. That's how you clinch a playoff berth.
That is unbelievable stuff. And the first half is just about coming to an end now, and you guys have a few all-stars, right?
Yes, we've got 5. We usually lead off the starting lineup with 4. Anthony Alford, prototypical center fielder. Richard Urania, 19-year-old shortstop. He has 11 home runs this year. Rowdy Tellez batting 3rd, 6'4", 250-pound, worthy of the name Rowdy, big slugger. And Ryan McBroom out of West Virginia, 21 doubles already this year, cleaning up. Shane Dawson goes to the mound tomorrow, leads the league and wins. There are future major leaguers on this team.
Folks, if you have not seen the Lansing Lugnuts this season, you are missing out on life. They're pretty good, okay? Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts and organizer for the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. Jesse, it is always a pleasure to have you right here on our show.
I love it. Thank you for having me.
No problem. This is our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this Friday edition of Current Sports by reflecting a bit. That's right. Reflection Friday is right around the corner. And an interesting article on LeBron James and his relationship with his head coach, David Blatt. You don't want to miss that. Hey, come on right back. You're listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. You are listening to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Is he not just the greatest guy or what? Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. Oh, boy, the Lansing Lugnuts. Always fantastic chatting with Jesse. In an incredible class for the first ever Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. That's unbelievable. I mean, the names, the amount of names just really just jump at you. I mean, 10 names that are all recognizable. Fantastic stuff. Fantastic stuff. All right, well, it is Friday, and each and every Friday here on WKRS Current Sports, when we have just under 10 minutes left on the show, we love to take a look at the week that was here on Current Sports Radio, Current Sports TV, and bring you some of our favorite moments, some of our favorite segments, and also maybe even a few stories that we didn't get a chance to cover. Here we go. It's time for Reflection Friday. All right, first off, I have to shout out our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports after taking 2 weeks off. It is great to see his smiling face right behind the glass once again. Isaac Constance, great first week back, huh?
Yeah, it really was. And yeah, I was definitely smiling after that shout out. I appreciate it, Al.
Hey,
it's great being back.
No problem. And continue with the positive vibes. You know, I went to my my mailbox before we started today's show. And I would be remiss if I did not shout out one of the hardest working students and interns that we've ever had here on the show. I went in my mailbox, and it just shows you the type of classy individual that he is, Isaac. I went in, it was a small card with Al written on it, and I opened up the card and it said it's a thank you card, and I gotta read it here on the air because it just touched my heart, man. It says, "Dear Al, thank you so much for making my senior year so memorable. Working Current Sports has been one of the highlights of my college career. I truly appreciate your willingness to be a reference for me, and I'm very lucky to consider you a mentor. Sincerely, Tyler Beck. P.S. I'll still call in from time to time." Tyler Beck, I don't know if you got a chance to meet Tyler Beck or know of Tyler Beck, Isaac, but man, he was a fantastic worker who was on the show multiple times. We had him on to analyze stuff. I mean, he has a bright future. He's actually also worked for Michigan State Communications, and I would see him at countless press conferences and so on and so forth. But he is now taking his talents to the ACC. How about that? So I wanted to shout out Tyler Beck. He will be missed, and I just want to shout him out because there's not too many people. This is the first time I've ever had an intern, or a former mentee of mine actually send me a thank you card. So that just made my week right there, Isaac.
And there's something special about handwritten notes.
There really is.
It's you know, they're this antiquated form of communication, but they're so sincere, so heartwarming. So shout out to him. I actually do know Tyler, too. First off, I worked at Impact Sports with him, but I also worked on Spartan Verses, a book that's going to be coming about
this is a book, you said?
Yeah, the 65 and 66 and MSU's championship football team. So
wow.
I helped edit it. It's written by a former lineman on the team. So he was a great guy to work with and a great guy in general. So.
And what lineman was that? Do you know his name off the top of your head?
I can find out for you.
That's pretty cool stuff, though. So you kind of helped write a book then. That's pretty cool, Isaac.
Just a little more editing, but yeah, he wrote it.
That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it's fun. But, okay, for Reflection Friday, though, I've got, first off, something you and I talked about after the show on Wednesday, I believe. It was Lance Stephenson going to the Clippers. I love Born Ready. That's, of course, his nickname. The story of him calling out LeBron, doing the choke sign, and nobody knowing who he was. And then the very next season, challenging LeBron, guarding him, the next season blown in his ear, which is unprecedented in the world of sports. So I love Born Ready. I hope he can make his name for himself, rewrite it a little bit, and I think he'll help the Clippers a lot. So that's my first reflect.
And Isaac, you just kind of enlightened me with that. Why is his nickname Born Ready? I didn't know that was his nickname.
Got it in high school when playing in Brooklyn. He was just one of the top prospects in the nation. Not sure if he gave it to himself, although he seems like the type of person to do that, or someone else did it.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's a cool name.
Very cool nickname. And you know what? That Lance Stephenson is also on my Reflection Friday because I saw that, you know, when we had this conversation after, I believe it was yesterday's show, And we're talking about Lance Stephenson, you know, moving on from the Hornets. You know, of course, I'm a big MJ fan. Michael Jordan is, you know, the general manager and owner of the Hornets. And, you know, I wondered how their relationship is. And it's right here on TMZ Sports, it's saying that NBA star Lance Stephenson tells at TMZ Sports, despite his disappointing one-year run in Charlotte, he's still on good terms with the team's owner, Michael Jordan. He just said that, hey, this past year didn't work out as I hoped. Hey, that's business, baby. So, Lance Stephenson, I'm wishing him the best. I love him. I love his grit. I love his grit in the NBA. Also for me, Isaac, it's going to be very interesting to see how this whole MSU softball investigation is going to go. It's been a hot button topic now for more longer than a week now. Just to see, I really hope that the allegations concerning MSU softball coach Jackie Joseph and Jesco Bograkis aren't true. I really hope the truth does come out and we'll go from there. But it's been very interesting to see the dialogue and to hear from Spartan Nation on their thoughts as to this case. So, again, we'll keep you guys updated as we learn more. And also thanks to Matt Charbonneau for coming on the show on Monday to talk about the article that he wrote. He was the reporter who broke this story. Also, having the Blackhawks and the Warriors both win titles and seeing former Spartans and Duncan Keith and Draymond Green win at the pinnacle of pro sports was very, very cool, especially for me to see Draymond Green, a guy who I had covered as an intern when I first really got my feet wet in sports broadcasting, and now to see him as an NBA champion. A lot of people don't know, actually, Draymond and I graduated in the same graduation ceremony. He walked across the stage about 5 or 10 minutes after I crossed the stage, and everybody went crazy, right? But my parents and, you know, those who attended that graduation ceremony, they look at the NBA Finals and say, hey, Al graduated with him. So that, I guess that's like my claim to fame now, right? Also, George Blaha, thanks a lot to George for coming on Current Sports TV. It was fantastic getting a chance to pick his brain. Again, a guy who I've been watching since I was a little tyke and growing up a Piston fan. Very, very cool stuff. You got another one for us, Isaac?
I do. I've got Tim Duncan losing $20 million through a bad financial advisor. Al, you got to call up Denzel and let him know. You know, yeah, he might have a new client who can make him some money.
Exactly.
$20 million. Yeah. It goes to show that being an athlete, one of the most important things, like Denzel Wright, who of course was on the show maybe a month and a half ago, was saying, is financial classes. Really, there's so much money going around and so important and integral, really, for these athletes to take on these classes and know how to manage their money, because it can be gone like that. Of course, Duncan's still a very wealthy man, but that toll on another player, that could be it for them.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, again, as you just stated, Isaac, I mean, Tim Duncan is very fortunate that he's been able to play and have a long career in the NBA and to accumulate and really fill that $20 million hole, which for an average player, if he was an average player in the NBA, which the lifespan isn't that long, I mean, he could be, he could be filing for bankruptcy right now. So, yeah, really, really riveting stuff. Maybe I need to call up Denzel and say, hey, hit up Tim Duncan, man. He needs your help. He needs your help, brother. But, hey, that wraps up our Reflection Friday. Thanks a lot, Isaac, for weighing in on that. Again, folks, it has been one fantastic week, but we have to say goodbye for 2 days. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports and this week's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic weekend, and as always, be easy, people.